Okay, I call a meeting for Wednesday, May 31st, to order. We have a quorum. All three of us are here for the first time in a little bit. We have no recognitions or proclamations, so we move directly to the consent calendar. Consent calendar items are things of routine nature or previously heard. Is there anything you'd like to mention or highlight?
No, Mr. Chair, I would move for adoption of the consent calendar as presented.
And I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. No public hearings, no decision in action item. We have discussion. Recommendation from the Nonprofit Social Service Agency Allocation Review Committee. And Julie Kay isn't available, so our staff will stand in.
Horse in.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, Commissioners. Tanya Graham, Admin Assistant with the Commissioners. So this year, our nonprofit social service grant process, we had 22 applications, and they requested a total of $311,000. The committee awarded $175,050. This year, four of the five committee members were able to attend the meeting, and all applicants came to the meeting and did 100%, you know, had 100% attendance. They all gave presentations. It was a really good process.
So, is there anything you gentlemen would like to mention on this list?
No, it looks like nobody was funded at 100% of the requested amount, but when you've got almost twice as much in requests as available funding, I think that's understandable.
So I made a couple of observations as I looked at the list. It looks like about $27,000 went to food activities of some sort, whether it was the Coastal Bank, I believe they're in Nashville.
Correct.
Or the Lincoln County Food Share or Meals on Wheels, those types of programs. Also thought it was interesting to see that about $28,000 went to senior activities of some sort. One of the comments I've heard is that the committee, and maybe Tanya, you can comment on this. I heard the committee was interested in the possibility of putting a cap on the request amount. You know, with the exception of Samaritan House at $45,000, they seem to be grouped around 20, maybe a little bit more. But I think that's worth at least a discussion.
I agree.
And that would be certainly consistent with the sentiments of the committee itself.
And also the Nonprofit Social Service Fund. We've capped that, isn't it, at $15,000 per request, I believe. So that would be consistent.
This is the nonprofit.
I mean, I'm sorry, the Community and Economic Development.
It was about $15,000,
yeah.
You know, I'd be comfortable with a $20,000 cap. I think that would also enable the funds to be distributed more equitably among the pool of applicants.
Okay. Well, I was looking at all these except for one were under 15. Why did you pick 20?
Well, the amount requested I was looking at.
Oh, the requested amount.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got CASA's at 22.
Youth Development Coalition at 22, and then Samaritan House at 45.
So, yeah, so it wouldn't impact very many agencies, but I think, again, it would serve to help distribute the funds.
Well, we have established the other group at 15. I'm wondering here, because none of these, except for the one, that even the requests are mostly under 15. Wouldn't we spread it a little more at 15? I'm not saying, right, I'm just asking the question.
It's a legitimate question. I think when the Truman Center was still operational, though, because they really had a hard time getting funding from outside sources for a variety of reasons, and there was a consensus that they were an important partner, not only for human services, but really for law enforcement as well, providing a place for people to go post-jail, that I think a few years we funded them at more than 20, and
Well, I think it's kind of a two-edged sword. Mm-hmm. I think you want to be providing enough money so that it's effective. Mm-hmm. These are operating funds, probably go mostly for staff or other non-capital activities, and you know, is $10,000 or $15,000 really enough to make a difference? I don't know, but I think maybe $20,000 is closer to an amount that would enable those organizations to use the money more effectively. And I think there's valid reasons to consider a higher cap on the Economic Alliance grants. Again, I think if you're looking at capital projects, you need an amount of money that is economically efficient. To accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. So those are my thoughts.
I'm going to look at Tanya. Your experience, you sit through a lot of these board meetings, I believe. Does $20,000 make sense?
That was the number that the committee was discussing, was $20,000.
Okay. I'm more than happy to go with that.
I am too.
Commissioners, maybe just a quick little note on the county's behalf. I was actually at the front end of this meeting talking to the group here, and I was actually involved in the initial process that set this up. And this is actually, it's pretty monumental. It was the 20th year that we have actually allocated these dollars, and I think Tanya helped me with this if I'm incorrect. It's over $2 million that's been distributed to agencies. And one of the things, the process we use is we actually, in requesting the agencies to come each year, is it's an opportunity for these agencies to see what each other does, an opportunity to really develop some relationships in terms of services. And we've seen that actually organically occur over the course of the years, where groups have come together and said, hey, I'm in the business of doing food, you're in the business doing shelter, how can we combine to serve the needs of the population out there? So I think it's been a really good process. I know a couple of other jurisdictions in the county have adopted our same kind of process, set up a committee to actually fund nonprofits that really are adjuncts to the services we provide in the county. So I think it's important to note those things.
Okay. So we have an answer then.
Do we need to do anything formal to make that change for next year?
There's two things. If there's a consensus with the recommendations, we'll prepare a final order for you next week, which will actually make these allocations. And then what we'll do is, if there's also a consensus to look at a cap on the amounts requested, we'll bring that back to the group that develops the actual application and ask them to consider that.
Okay. I say yes to both.
Yep.
Okay. I agree. So we move down to item B, relating to regulations for organization of events. Jerry?
Mr. Kenyon is going to give his comments initially, and Mr. Herbert just stepped out for just a second here.
We've got right. Staff pitch hitting all over the place, don't we?
All kinds of things going on.
We have staff, so just take any job we get.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Job titles anymore.
I'm Roy Kenyon, Public Works Director for Lincoln County.
I'm Jerry Herbert, Assistant Legal Counsel.
And what we bring to you this morning is, I guess, a proposal for an ordinance. First one is relating to regulations of organized events. And within Lincoln County Public Works, the road department, we have a permit system that we require people who are going to be occupying the county right-of-way for any kind of construction, utility placement, and events of all sizes and shapes, anything from the Newport Marathon to the 4th of July parade in Glen Eden Beach to the powwow parade out in Siletz. The problem being is, because we have a wide array of things, it's really hard to get a permit that adequately covers what the information that we need from these events. And so we're going to separate out, in this case, keep our operations permit strictly for utility companies, for construction within the right-of-way, things of that nature. And we're going to create a new permit that covers events. And basically what Jerry has put together here is that ordinance. And we We were worried that with improper wording, we would actually include some things we didn't want to include. We're not trying to permit a family gathering kind of a thing where maybe a family takes a walk down the county road. That something that's a couple people get together on horseback and ride down the road. These are actually organized events that actually trigger the need for traffic control or for signage or something of that nature. Jerry?
Yeah, thanks. Well, commissioners, first of all, as you can tell, this is for discussion. So Wayne wanted to see how you felt about both these items that we'll be talking to you about, mass gatherings and organized events. Originally, what we did is we looked at the ordinances from some other counties that regulate this, and I'll explain that those included Clatsop, Yamhill, Columbia, at least those counties. And what we did was something different. So this ordinance centers around organized events, and the other counties regulate based on the numbers of people for an event. And when I discussed this with Roy, he said, the numbers isn't something I'm so interested in. He said, I'm more interested in organizing or regulating certain events. Okay, so the numbers are not in here. And the other thing that you should know is organized events are events on county roads. So there was an option to regulate, for instance, on public roads or wherever. This is limited to county roads. And in the definition, which centers around organized events, so held on a county road and sponsored by an organization or other entity and advertised in advance. And it includes things like bicycle races, parades, walkathons, those sorts of things. It's meant to regulate health and safety. And it's a permit system. What is proposed is that if someone is planning an organized event at least 60 days in advance, they submit for a permit. And the clearinghouse here is the road department. So if there's maybe some good news for you, this does not go to the Board of Commissioners either directly or on an appeal. Someone doesn't like this, it goes to the circuit court as a writ of review. Let's see if there's what else. It provides for indemnity agreement, proof of insurance, application fees, proposals, no emergency. It would take effect 90 days after passage, but today is just a discussion point.
Let me ask you a few questions.
Yes.
Okay. How does this affect the marathon?
It actually doesn't affect the marathon at all. We are currently permitting the marathon through our current application. But like I said, it's just not a good fit because that application was actually designed more around construction, utility placement within the right-of-way. And because it was our one application, we try to use it as a catch-all.
How many of these types of events do you expect to permit through your department?
Annually?
Yeah.
Oh, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25. And it's actually growing. It's a growing number. They're putting on fundraisers as far as runs, bicycle rides, that kind of thing. It's becoming more popular. Parades have been pretty stable. The number of parades, that's kind of an annual thing, once a year. Like the Barrel to Keg Run has been an annual. Now they actually have a bicycle ride also, so that this is another permitting event. I'd say 20, 25 a year is what
we. And how much time do you expect to have to spend in your department doing that? And who's going to handle it?
Well, basically, my permit specialist is the one who gathers the information make sure that the permit is filled out correctly, and then he turns it over when he's satisfied and when he's received the proof of insurance, when he's received all the information that he needs. In most cases, there isn't actually any kind of a site visit necessary, especially because it's routine.
Right.
It's every year, especially like with the Newport Marathon. They actually have already had their annual pre-race meeting where everything is lined out. And that we don't so much with the smaller events have anything like that, but it's the same start, same finish. We require the same things. My guess is that total for Kelly's time, we're looking at a couple hours probably.
Hey, how much fee is associated, or is there a fee associated?
Well, it depends. And it does, because that's discretionary on my part. It really depends on what the fundraiser or the event is about. If it's a charity event, we waive the fee. We do not charge a fee for that. If it is a private event that is held for profit, then it's $150.
Any questions?
Yes. I understand the reasoning for a 60-day lead time, but is there going to be any provision? Okay, let's say, just hypothetically, Taft High School wins an athletic championship and folks want to have a victory parade in Glenedon Beach. Would they have some kind of route to request a permit?
Well, because I'm a boomer, mm-hmm. I don't know that I would allow that.
It's a good thing you're an appointed official.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're going to have to go right in then.
Yeah. Okay. And there again, that's discretionary on my part. Something that's unforeseen, like okay. you say, mm-hmm. I would allow for that.
Okay.
It's these events, like I said, that are annual.
Marathons, parades.
Marathons, parades.
Sure.
Anything
yeah.
that has taken kind of a process of organization to put it together, in most cases,
that's
2 months
reasonable.
Is it? Two months is adequate.
Yeah.
And just from counsel, assistant counsel's point, it's covered in 6.530, but... the general rule is if it's filed less than 60 days, you can do it, but the fees double. But fees are controlled by your separate fee provisions. They can be waived, or there can be some discretion in how that applies.
That's the only question I had.
So let me play devil's advocate, and I think you covered this briefly, but I'd be interested in, I guess, more discussion. Why do we need this?
I think I can try to answer that. It's a health and safety issue. I think that to answer your question about why do we need it, probably what's important is to look at the draft and look at what it requires in advance. And in part, we want to know if alcohol is going to be part of the event. I think that can be a safety issue. I think that it calls for an organized event control plan. Is there a need for partial closures? Is there in the way of flaggers? How about signage, barriers? Who's going to be responsible for such things? So there's different things, I think. It's health and safety. And... that's why I think that there can be certain flexibility, but many events we really want to know.
I might add one just from my perspective, too. Jerry has this in the draft ordinance, but I'm very concerned with the way case law has come down recently on basically liability of public entities. Recreational amenity cases have really kind of uprooted everything that we knew before in terms of what liability we might have when people are utilizing land for recreation purposes. So this also addresses the fact that you're going to have to provide, you know, some protection for the public out here in terms of having adequate insurance. So it's not just the risk management end that Jerry discussed there, the safety part of it, but it's also to protect us from liability, the public right. from liability.
And also, like I said, we are operating on a permit system now, but it's the exact same form that we've used probably for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And like I said, as there get to be more of these events, it's just our application does not fit what it is that we're requiring from these event organizers. And so it's trying to build a better mousetrap here.
No, I understand, and I support the ordinance. And I think it's important to know that a lot of time policies are created to avoid issues that may arise without the policy.
Right.
And it's much easier to address issues if you have a policy versus all of a sudden you've got a crisis and there's no policy. So,
right, and it's to try to help the organizers of the event so that they, you know, as far as liability goes, sure. they don't hang themselves out there also.
And they also know the parameters within which they're operating
right.
so to their benefit that way. So, thank you.
Yeah. Makes sense to me.
Me too.
Yep. Commissioners, if there's a consensus, then what we'll do is bring this ordinance back for first reading at next Wednesday's meeting.
Okay.
We're down to item D, bid award for
another one.
C, Mr. Chair.
We got to do C.
I thought these were together.
Nope.
No. Okay. Jerry, I apologize. I thought we were discussing them both together.
No, we haven't really talked about mass gathering. But it is similar to the other, as we're in the discussion phase, not a first reading. Let me explain. You know, I'm from Curry County, and we had the Cape Blanco Country Music Festival there, and that was covered as a mass gathering under statute, and we're like 15,000 to 18,000 people. And that doesn't happen here very often, as I understand, in Lincoln County. But there are large events that bring out health and safety issues, as well as what Wayne pointed out, liability issues. So this is intended to address the smaller gatherings. So let's kind of go over how we got here. A number of counties do regulate mass gatherings, and some of the ordinances that we looked at were from Deschutes County, Washington, Crook, Columbia, Clackamas, Yamhill, and Marion. So many counties have these. If you don't have an ordinance, you go simply under the state statute. The statute says this basically applies, but you can adopt local ordinances as long as they're not inconsistent with state law. That's what it says in Chapter 433. So we looked at some of these ordinances, and then we went through a number of drafts. And like, you know, the organized event ordinance, we did something unique. Nobody that I read, none of the counties have organized this ordinance like we did. So what we've done is we've split it out. There are three categories of mass gatherings, okay? And we wanted to follow the statute and then have our own small gathering ordinance so that smaller events could be covered. So if you look at the mass gathering statute, and we borrowed from the language for outdoor mass gathering, it's an actual or reasonably anticipated assembly of more than 3,000 persons, which continues or can reasonably be expected to continue for more than 24 hours, but less than 120 hours in a three-month period. So it seems kind of technical, but that's what's on the books. And so I want you to know you're looking at, it says more than 3,000. So 3,001 and more persons. That's not going to happen very often. So we're probably not going to worry about that too much. And then an extended mass gathering is basically the same, except it's expected to continue for more than 120 hours. And under law, that becomes a land use decision. So the Planning Commission makes the decision and handles all that. So what Wayne had suggested is that for health and safety and liability reasons, we ought to consider regulating small gatherings. And the law allows that. but you got to have an ordinance if you want to do that. And so if you look at page 3 of the draft, it tells us that a small gathering is an assembly of persons, basically where the number is expected to be less than the ceiling, which is 3,000 persons, so less than 3,001 persons, but then 400 persons. So more than 400 persons for a period of time, more than 6 hours, not more than 72 hours, and so on in any three-month period. So the proposal is to regulate small gatherings. And we went through a number of drafts in dealing with this, and I want you to know that both for the first draft ordinance and this one, Wayne organized a meeting with the various departments that are affected. And we met on April 27th. We had a good meeting in the small conference room, and we got a lot of input. We hashed through some things, and we made some, you know, a lot of changes and stuff, but we got a lot of buy-in, I think, from the various affected departments, which is the sheriff and Health and Human Services and Road Department. And so I try to keep this short because I'm always told to keep this short. It's based on a permit system, so it's going to be like your first ordinance. The permit provisions tell you what you got to put in the application. And in part, it follows the OAR. So if you look at the Oregon Administrative Rules for these things, they list requirements for, like, you don't want people to get food poisoning and stuff. So, you know, food and sewer and traffic and fire and, you know, all those things become really important when a large number of people get together. So it incorporates those kind of things in the permit thing. There are exclusions. We're not intending to regulate, like, church service. They, like, somebody has a wedding or some such thing that's on regular grounds or that, you know, things in our parks, school activities. So look at the exclusions, you know.
Well, who's in charge of this one, Gary?
Who's in charge? That's a good question. The administration will come from planning. So the first one, administration, is the road department on the organized events. This one, planning will help. Will be where the permits get submitted to, and they're going to handle the processing of the small gathering. So it won't come to you. That will completely bypass you. And if someone doesn't like the small gathering permit decision, then it goes to circuit court. Your state out of it.
Okay. Hey, since Otto walked in the room, I'm going to ask him a question.
Otto. Great timing, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chef, come forward a second here. You can
pull up the chair.
I don't want to get into a long debate here, but so how many of these permits do you plan on having, and what about staff time for this?
Really have no idea. You know, it's all about the applicants and how they come in. So this is going to be an experience for us to see how often we still get a lot of inquiries. People call, they want little wedding venues and stuff. So it's out there. And
let me ask you this question then this way. Who in your staff is going to handle this? And I know that some people are fairly well workloaded down over there. Does everybody in the office handle it, or does one person become a specialist like they do in the road department?
No, I think the component within a department are three planners. We're going to be, you know, this is going to be an additional responsibility for us.
Three planners.
Well, we'll be hiring a third planner, but that's.
Can I note, though, just in all fairness, we've already been dealing with these issues. They come up as you know, we can think of one venue that's had a number of these events over the years, and we're already spending a considerable amount of staff time through either the sheriff's office and or the planning department dealing with issues related to this matter, which is in part why we wanted to have put something in place now so we have a mechanism to deal with it when it comes up.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that. It's not as if we're not dealing with the issue and this is an entirely fresh issue, so actually having some clarity about how to handle them might actually be an advantage. Should this really blow out on us, we'll come back to you And
we'll know better in a year than what we're dealing with after. Several of these are one-time things. Like your small ones, are probably a lot of those are going to be one-time things, so it may change from year to year. But the bigger events, I assume, will probably become annualized. But what, like the road department, you'll know they have those in advance. What about the fee?
I really have not drilled down into the fee aspect.
The ordinance contemplates a fee, the fee to be set by the board. I think you do things like we do in Curry County. Generally, you don't want your fee tied into your ordinance, so you have to amend your ordinance every time. You have to adjust your fee because of cost of living and other
factors. You put it in the fee schedule.
Yeah. So you put it in the fee schedule. This calls for a fee, and that will be something that we'll have to figure out your amount of time and all that kind of stuff. But that's the idea, is that it would be covered by a fee. And so in most of these, as I said, will be small gatherings. Will go exclusively through this department, that is the planning department. And it's done without a hearing. It's done as an administrative decision.
Right.
So we want to streamline these things. See, if somebody needs this event to happen, we don't want to get this hung up, but you know, with a bunch of local, you know, right, within your appeals. And so if someone doesn't like it, they can go to circuit court. But basically, most of these will just be handled directly by the department. By the director, will make the decision.
I feel more comfortable if he had a proposed fee already. Then,
can I suggest that we're in the process right now of setting the next round of fees? It's actually out to the departments to make their recommendations. We look at fees twice a year. We'll be coming up with a fee schedule in July. We'll actually have a proposed fee for this that you consider as part of the overall fee schedule before we even finalize the adoption of this. At least it'll be there so that if this is adopted, the fee will be in place.
Any questions?
Well, I just would observe that I certainly share concerns about staff time. At the same time, I think this ordinance would be a good example of providing some structure, some uniformity as to how these issues are addressed, which in the long run would really reduce staff time, I think.
People are asking for the guidance.
Yes,
they really want to know.
Excuse me, but you've got to deal with every situation kind of individually as it's in the present environment. So with a policy, you've got some uniformity and structure that, again, I think adds to the efficiency and saves time.
Can I suggest the one thing, the biggest issue we had in looking at ordinances across the state, and many counties, other than ones Jerry mentioned, have adopted these kinds of provisions. The real question is, what's the threshold? Where do you start the regulation? And we really did not want to get in the business of taking, you know, small weddings, small parties, you know, one-off events like that, and getting into the process of regulating those. So we chose the 400 person, and that's, you know, part of what we hope you think about here. We've seen them lower than that, Jerry, right?
That's correct.
Seen them down to 250, anything over 250 people, they start regulating in some counties. But we felt this is kind of a threshold where you could have a significant impact on your neighbors, you know, more of an event. And so that was probably the most difficult thing for us to look at here was, where's that threshold on the bottom end? When do you start doing this?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. No questions at this point. I'll want to review this in detail before we take it up again next week. But in concept, I'm really glad to see this moving forward. 400 strikes me as a reasonable number to begin regulation for the reasons Mr. Belmont stated. You know, a few years back, I remember going to meet with a citizens group in Five Rivers, and this was actually about a mass gathering, a music festival that was happening on property in Lane County, but the neighbors in Five Rivers were concerned because essentially the only access to the property was through our county road, Five Rivers Road, which was getting clogged with hundreds of cars in and out of this event, and Yahat's Fire actually serves Park Lane County, and so they were concerned. And then I think the thing that really pushed it over the edge for the folks in Lane County to take action was a video that was produced. They had a burning effigy, and this is in the middle of summer when the forest was quite dry, and I believe Anna has seen the video. fireworks attached to the effigy shooting off into the tinder dry forest. So that's just maybe one example of why something like this would be needed and appropriate.
Well, 400 seems kind of big to me, but
yeah, I might want to.
I see. You got to start somewhere. It doesn't mean we can't move it down, but to me, you give me 200 loud people, you got a lot. I don't. It seems like 400 might be a little large.
It's a generous threshold. In fact, within our internal conversations, I kept pressing for a lower threshold, but I think this is going to be a work in progress. If it gets implemented, we're going to learn as we go, and we'll see. And I suspect we would be coming back to you with the benefit of experience behind us, whether it's too low or what the logistics of trying to work this.
Yeah. And we'll start there, but I think that 200 is
it's a lot of people.
Probably a different number that I would probably support, but we got to start somewhere.
Well, I share those concerns. To me, it's harder to start with a high number and go lower. I would rather start with a more conservative number, and then if that seems to be excessive, raise that limit. So, yeah, I'd certainly be open to a 300 figure, and depending on the sentiments of my fellow commissioners, maybe 200. So, 400 seems to me to be a big number.
Would it help if we did a survey, quick survey for you on what other counties have set, so you have a list of the counties and the numbers they've set as the minimum threshold?
Would that help? Really?
Well, the only thing that's good about that, the reason I say that, is most of these places have had these ordinances in effect for a number of years.
Yeah, but this is Lincoln County. This is a tourist area. It's a big difference than Clackamas County or someplace.
What I'm suggesting to you is they have experience of dealing with it to know whether or not they're having issues because they've had these ordinances in effect for a number of years. So if it would be useful to you, we can give you those numbers.
I don't think it really was that useful to us in my mind, because you're sitting here at a tourist destination, and most of those counties that you listed are not a tourist destination. And so you're going to find a completely different atmosphere in Lincoln County than you do in Polk County or someplace like that. And that's why I say, to me, we have to design something for our county because we're a tourist destination. Okay. So I'm not saying that I think your idea has some merit. It's just that I think if this is, we're in a different situation to be like trying to say how many boats you can have in Polk County. That just doesn't fit.
So what we need then is some kind of direction then, because if we're going to come back with a first reading next week, what we'd like to do is plug a number in that you would like to see. And this is the discussion we wanted to have, actually. This is great.
Okay. I could go to 300 for a beginning as a start, because I think that 400 is a little high.
I'm with that.
Okay, I'm okay with 300.
Then we will substitute that number and make it 300.
Well, Mr. Chairman, at the risk of stating the obvious, it's not the number of people, it's what they're like and what they're doing. If it's literally sort of like a gathering of a quilting association, I don't think the number really matters. But we saw with Tidewater Falls that certain groups, where it's alcohol-fueled and loud amplifiers running all night long. Now, that starts, I don't care if that's 100 people or 500, that's really, it's what these people are like and what they're doing out there that really also, and the frequency of the activity that really begins to set people off. I think most people can happily endure the family gathering or the this and that. That's what this whole point is, that it gives us an ability to rein this stuff in.
Okay, let me ask you a question related to the eclipse. Do we want to hold this thing out there until after the eclipse? Because the eclipse is an unusual situation, which would be in a lot of mass gatherings.
Potentially. We have had some inquiries from parties, although I would say most of them probably fall below the threshold in Lincoln County, although I will tell you, anecdotally, we've heard from many other counties that they're far exceeding the mass gathering. You're actually issuing mass gathering permits. And that's one of the questions that we really need to answer here, is whether or not we're going to do this for the eclipse. I know that a lot of jurisdictions are, for instance, things like regulation of VRDs. You know, I don't know if you've heard the stories I have, but I know people that have said, I'm leaving my house for that weekend and that Monday, and I'm going to rent it to somebody on a one-off kind of thing. Again, not something they're going to do regularly. some jurisdictions are saying we can't possibly regulate all those activities. Well, so they're basically declaring a so-called holiday from those kinds of regulations. That, so that's a question we have to answer.
Well, that's became my other question was, is then if you do the eclipse, how the heck are you going to enforce anything?
It's kind of going to be difficult in terms of timing, and I think that the current game plan was not to have this adopted for that, but that's, you know, the board could adopt this as an emergency, but just to make that work in that tight time frame might be difficult. But it's something for you to think about. Could I mention just a couple other things I want you to be aware of? Okay. I think you're aware of this, but currently we have on the books, and I think it's very, very old, Wayne would know this, we have an ordinance called entertainment assemblies, and it's when I look at the tort claim limits that it talks about and stuff, I know it's really old, but it covers indoor and outdoor, and it's really antiquated. And what I'm telling you is the proposal is to repeal that. Yeah. Okay, that would be gone.
No problem with that. Okay. I love repealing ordinances.
Okay. So that's section 3 is that it would be repealed. And so although I said the administration would come from planning, and that's true, enforcement would be from the sheriff's office. So that may be something to consider in terms of the fee and the overall cost, because the enforcement is from another branch of this county. It's fairly analogous to the first ordinance you did where it, you know, calls for a fee, insurance, indemnity agreement, and that kind of thing. So if you have any questions, just I'm around or whatever, or Wayne's around. We all worked on this. Wayne's had a lot of input. Kristen has had input, various departments.
So what do you guys think?
I'm comfortable with the ordinance. I think 300 is a good number to start at. I don't think anything magical about it, but it seems to be a reasonable compromise.
What about with the eclipse?
I think we need to try to be reasonable. Sure, I guess in an idealistic world, you say it would be great to have this ordinance in place and help manage some of the unexpected activities. But the reality is this is the, I don't know when the next eclipse will come to Oregon, but we won't be out there. And it'll probably be an outdated ordinance. ideally, sure, it'd be great to have it, but I think the reality is to try to implement it that quickly would create more problems than it would solve. So I don't see any urgency.
So do we have an effective date in this, or?
We will have an effective date, yes. Can I suggest that also that, you know, the eclipse has a whole bunch of issues around it in terms of our both our capability to enforce and our, you know, whether we are going to enforce a variety of things here. We're meeting regularly on a variety, several groups are meeting to discuss this. I happen to be meeting with various city managers and discussing their approach to doing these things. We're going to probably bring you a package in the not too distant future here of recommendations related to the eclipse event. So we can, and especially we want to make that information available to the public out there, what we are and aren't going to do.
So
in anticipation of that. So
a question. What about looking at a September 1st effective date for this? So if anybody wanted to do what?
Can I explain that?
Okay.
So the current proposal is that this not be adopted as an emergency.
Right.
So way that would work ordinarily is you can have a later effective date, but if you don't put a later effective date, you have two readings at least 13 days apart, and then of course it becomes effective 90 days after. So that would
might be more toward October.
Closer to October.
I was just thinking September 1st in case anybody wanted to plan anything big for Labor Day weekend. But
Again, this is something brand new. We're dealing with the issues as they come up. We have been dealing with them for a number of years. This is a forward-looking, future-looking kind
of thing. I'm okay with 90 days. So.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, on the eclipse thing, it is such a one-off deal. Mm-hmm. I have fielded so many different phone calls from different people. You know, literally, I got a call from a pastor of a church saying, hey, you know, we like to maybe rent out our parking lot and you know, do I need permits, and you know, it's such a one-off deal that by the time it happens, it's over. You know, when this thing really happened, when this entire program, we knew something else needed to happen, was this is for properties that are routinely having events. Mm-hmm. And it was the bad actors doing that were exploiting loopholes, and then there was this litigation that the state actually stepped in because of Prindle Creek Farms. Mm-hmm. Was so over the top. And so this was really in reaction to people that are exercising dwelling rights and vacation rentals that then start having events on a routine basis. Yeah. That was really what started this whole thing. So I would encourage you not to be...
The question we're talking about is 90 days.
Yeah, I'm fine with 90 days.
Okay. 90 days.
I am.
Okay, then we've settled on 90 days. Is there any other information you need from us?
Just remember, it's unincorporated areas only for this one. So the first ordinance you looked at was only county roads when we were talking with Roy about that. This one is only unincorporated areas of the county. So the cities will have their own thing.
Okay. If they choose.
If they choose.
We all agree. Yeah. So then, Otto, as this comes into play, since I'm the commissioner that works with the planning department, I hope you'll communicate with me early if you start to detect the problem so that we can deal with it.
Yes, I look forward to that.
Okay. That's the shortest answer.
It is possible.
He could have stopped it, yes.
I'll get him eventually. Okay.
Good work.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we're down to item B. Bid awarding Collective Construction Solutions to LLC for the remodeling of the jail lobby at a cost of $196,832. Roy?
Yes. On May 25th, we, as in Lincoln County, opened bids for the new jail lobby remodel. We received one qualified bid. The $196,000 was within the estimated cost range of $150,000 to $200,000. We did have some other interest in a bid. One contractor had just received basically another project, was unable to fit the timeline. Some of the other ones, for whatever reason, chose not to bid. It's not a complicated remodel, other than the fact that because it's within the jail, they are using what they call bullet guard material, bulletproof wall, bulletproof glass. I think that in its sense, it's kind of a specialized thing. I don't know that there's been a lot of contractors who've worked with that. Therefore, kind of limited the amount of people who were willing to put in a bid. Like I said, we did get one qualified bid. It does fit within the estimated range. And I'm here to ask you to award that bid to Collaborative Construction Solutions, who is a contractor out of Clackamas.
Clackamas County?
Clackamas.
May I ask you one quick question? Because in the past, when we let things go here in the last couple of years, we've had lots of bidders. Mm. Are we finding this across the board that literally there's so much business out there right now in construction that we're having more problems?
Yes. And I think it's twofold. It's things are starting to pick back up. We're starting to see some growth, so there's more jobs. But because of the downturn that we suffered, there's less contractors to choose from. And in cases like when we put out bids for work within the courthouse, work within the jail, the contractor and their crew have to fit within certain requirements. And so that is even more of a limiting factor. And so, yes, it's business is good for the contractors that are around. There's just not that as many around because there was a lot of the smaller contractors that folded during the the last impressions.
So, gentlemen, what do you feel?
The only question I would have is, have we done any business with Collaborative Construction? What do we know about them?
We have not done any business with them, to my knowledge.
But I assume all their paperwork was in order, or they wouldn't have been able
to do it. Yes. Okay. We, bid bonds were there. Everything was intact. It was a good qualified bid.
Okay.
Do you know if they've had any experience with, with any jail construction before? Is this...
I did not get an opportunity to talk to them about that, so I can't answer that. I don't know.
I'm happy with moving it forward for award.
Yeah.
I can find out.
I think you ought to find out if they've had any experience at all. It doesn't mean we wouldn't have put it. It's within it, but it'd be nice to know what we're dealing with. Okay, I think you've got an agreement.
So we'll prepare an order then for next week that makes it work.
Okay.
I might note, though, that the comment you heard about contractors in the area is also a huge factor in the housing situation. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I was listening. Of course, I'm a Bloomberg News person, that's where I go for my news, and they were talking about the East Coast slowdown. It's the West that's still growing, building, and our housing starts are still up or down from what they would like to have had, what their projections were, but the East Coast has had a substantially bigger slowdown than we have in the West. So if things happen like they normally do, it moves from east to west on this kind of thing.
Last
yeah. Okay. So we move down to reports. Elected officials' reports.
Mr. Chair, could I mention that last week I attended, end of last week, the Western Interstate Region Conference of NACO at Bend, and it was a good couple of days, informative presentations on federal land policies, real in-depth discussion of the ONC lands and their fate, and one of the presentations pointed out that when the ONC Act was adopted in 1937, there was 50 million board feet on those lands. Since 1937, 73 million board feet have been harvested from them, and currently they're standing at 50 million board feet again. So it was their contention that ONC lands are a great example of sustained yield management working. Also had a very interesting presentation from former member of Congress Mary Bono about the opioid epidemic and the work that she is continuing to do on that, and has with so many people who get very passionate about addictions issues. She said it was because her own son developed an addiction to prescription painkillers, and so she's out trying to kind of spread the word. And anyway, it was a good conference.
I might point out that I chaired the Cascade West Area Commission on Transportation board meeting last Thursday in Albany, and one of the items that we discussed was Highway 20. There's still work to be done. But seriously, construction will begin June 1st on the west end where they're straightening the S-curves. The contract states that the construction and the final alignment will be open by September 22nd. There will be no overnight or extended closures. There will be some 20-minute delays, flagging during single lanes for single lane traffic that may occur over 24-hour periods, but nothing that's going to stop traffic for more than estimated 20 minutes. Also, there will be no construction activity the few days before or the few days after the eclipse. So,
very wise.
Again, it will be nice to see that final stretch of highway open and operational by September, end of September.
So I'll mention, last week I was on the Google campus. I was actually down to board of directors for undersea cables. I've been working on that for years, and Google has now installed a cable, and they become a member of the board when they do. It was quite an experience to be on a campus with 25,000 people working on innovative ideas, and the way they operate a campus in literally a major think tank is by hiring the best in the world, the brightest in the world, to come in. And they believe in collaboration. They don't do the same system of management with bosses that we do. You're expected to get a job and you're expected to produce. And it was interesting, they have all the food supplied there. That was one of the things. That's a huge food system they have, but it makes healthy lifestyles as an important part of your job. Also an important part of your job is to stay physically fit. You didn't see the same type of things going on. And I assume they hire to that technique. And I was surprised how few older people, if you think about it in technology, you can see why, because old guys with gray hair weren't brought up with the computer system.
Business for the young. Yeah.
It's a business for the young, and it was a real eye-opener to what can be done in education and in innovation and job workplace. They have a desire to make their atmosphere a very pleasant place to work. Of course, they're sitting in 80-90 degree weather. You can do a lot of things that may not be quite as easy to do when it's raining and it's outside today. But it was gave me a lot of things to think about, so to bring into maybe development that we get into the Marine Science Center. Just, we are trying to change a new innovative way of doing the science in that. So it's going to be interesting to see what goes from there forward.
Sounds like a fun trip.
Great. Okay.
Commissioners, if I might, just one quick note, because I'm sure the questions are out there. The unofficial vote on the ballot measure and ordinance concerning spraying was tallied last night. And the certified results should come to us by next Tuesday. So I just want to just note for you that I will be talking about your options, some recommendations, and next steps at next week's meeting.
Okay. There was a 61 vote margin, and Dana Jenkins told me that's enough to put it outside the territory for an automatic recount.
I think it's outside that.
Well, it'll be nice to have some lawyers back since we haven't been able to. It's a challenge to get into some of these kinds of issues without a legal staff, and we couldn't talk to our legal staff during this. So once it's certified, then we can talk and start to ask you questions. So welcome back. Okay. Constituent input. Constituent input, 5 minutes on any subject a person would like to speak to. And please come forward and tell us who you are.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm hoping you all remember her. And she came with me this morning. I'm hoping that this is the last time I get to see you gentlemen on this issue. And so one of the things that I'm here to is to appeal to the public, because I know this is recorded. And we, as you all know, we're going to trial next week, and so I'm really making a call out to all the people that we've helped in our community to join us at the courthouse on the 6th, 6th, 7th, and 6th, 8th. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning next week to finally have the truth brought out on all of these issues that we face with the county. And I spent a lot of time these last 72 hours going over, as you can imagine, dozens and dozens of testimony before you. And the one that haunts me the most, of course, is the one where my daughter spoke. And she came in here and she said, I'm not here to say whether I'm right, you're wrong, whether this is going to cure, cannabis is going to cure cancer, it's going to cure illness. But what it will do is give what little time these people that are suffering have, maybe improve the quality of what time they have left. And for her, she didn't get that. Because as our family was continued to be served with documents, and it never let up for us. And she was lost during that time. So I brought you all a gift, and I also, as I told you once before, she wrote me something minutes before she was killed, left my driveway. And so this morning I'm going to read that to you. And this was November 11th, 2016. And she said, "I just wanted to take a second out of my day to honor you. I want you to know I have never been more proud of the woman you are and the young warrior you have created in me. Your honesty, your love inspire me every day. When I find it so easy to run away, you have taught me it's okay to face those fears head on. When the world is whirling with material things on their agenda, you always remind us of what's truly important. The things money will never replace, family, and the true knowledge of right from wrong. Tonight, as I drive from the dispensary, I thought of all you have done for me, my family, and our community. You are my hero, and I love you so much." Now, as a parent, if that's the last word you ever hear from your child, you know you did something right. So today, I'm going to do something right. And let's see here. I know I have one for you, Ono. But I hope you don't mind if I approach you. This is for you. This is for you, sir. This is for you. And this is for you. Let's see. I know I have one. And this is for you, unfortunately. Your name was misspelled. So I look forward to seeing you all in court next week. Those were subpoenas that you've been served with. And I hope we have a large gathering. Hopefully I don't need a permit, hey? At our county courthouse. And so I'm sorry it all came to this. I wore purple because this represents love, and I'm really trying to do this out of love and the love for my children and my family. It's been a long, long road, and I'm tired. I'm tired of the fight. I'm tired of all of this, and it's sad because as I see in our Lincoln County area, these dispensaries, and I've watched what the greed has produced in this industry as our legislature invites not only, you know, OLCC is sitting on $79 million in their account right now of so-called, what I was threatened with, federally illegal money as federal regulators in the alcohol industry. And yet, for some reason, they can funnel $79 million of that same federally illegal substance money into their account. And invite people from other states. You know, there was a rule on the books that it was supposed to be a 2-year residency requirement, but, you know, we had all that money influence in the state of Oregon. And so not only coming in from other states, but other countries. So that's what we've created in this state while we ruin the last few 20 that I understand true medical facilities in the state of Oregon. And that's pretty sad because it was about the medicine. That's why I started, was to help the sick. Had nothing to do with money, ever. It'll never be about that.
So you guys have a good day.
Thank you.
For the record, I'd like to state that I've kept myself ignorant of these activities, and I had absolutely no knowledge of the court trial that is pending.
Okay. Hey, I did.
I didn't either.
Right, I have heard about the date, so. Okay. Let's see. We have any executive sessions? We don't have any?
Nope.
So, we meet again On the Board of Commissioners, we meet here again at 9:30 at West Olive Street next on June 7th. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Okay. Okay.
How are we going to do that?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. Just glanced it on.
It's going to be interesting.
Okay.
Are we adjourned?
We are adjourned.